B-Pod Studios.
Stay with us and we're going to show you how to take dead aim.
Take dead aim.
The importance of taking dead aim.
Welcome to Taking Dead Aim, a show dedicated to the game of golf and the people who play it in the Carolinas and around the world. Taking Dead Aim is a presentation of Academy Sports and Outdoors. And now, here's your host, the guy using your member number at the snack bar, Charlie Nance.
Welcome back. Once again, we're Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at @CLT_golfguy. As always, during the COVID-19 crisis, I hope this podcast finds you safe, healthy, and playing some golf. And this week, I hope it has you watching a lot of golf, as in this season's Tour Championship. You know, I think when golf shut down in March at the Players and then didn't come back until June, there was sensible speculation that it would not return. However, I believe an argument can be made that because of golf being so successful in its pandemic return, that the other sports have not only tried, but thrived, and I'm really proud of the sport for their fearless leadership in this respect. Despite the playoffs, there are still two majors to be played this year, the U.S. Open at Wingfoot in a couple of weeks, and the long-delayed Masters contested for the first time in the fall this November. But this is the third and final playoff from historic East Lake in Atlanta, and we'll talk with Ron Green Jr. on site for the event. Also, we'll spend a good deal of time with the University of North Carolina head men's golf coach, Andrew DiBattista. A lot is made of the impact of COVID-19 on college football and basketball, but golf has been majorly impacted. He'll break it all down for you and talk about what it's like to coach a college golf team that's really not even a team right now. But we begin in Atlanta with Ron Green Jr. Ron, I'm going to ask you straight up, when golf came back in what, the second or third week in June after shutting things down in March for the Players, if you were to lay a percentage on it at that point of us making it to East Lake as successful as we have been, what percentage would you have put on it?
60% maybe. I just think there were so many unknowns. I mean, obviously there was no certainty it was going to get to this point and come through it the way they have, or the way the tour has, but I think it has exceeded everyone's expectations. It's been just, there have obviously been some positive tests, but the numbers are minuscule. And as one of the players said, it became quickly apparent after Hilton Head, when some tests popped up positive, that it's not just about taking care of themselves. It was about being taken care of everybody around them and being careful. And so it's been, shown the way for professional sports. Obviously, the NBA with its bubble has done a good job. The NFL is working through it. So, everybody had to adapt, and the tour continued to adapt. And I think, that gives them cause for a little bit of celebration here in the Atlanta Heat.
Yeah, and I don't think that golf has been given as much credit as they should be as far as the leadership. They were the very first ones to stick their toe in the water and said, we're going to give this a try. And everybody else said, well, hell, if golf can do it, we can do it too, and came after them. And I don't hear the praise forthcoming from other sports about golf taking that first step.
Yeah, I know that when he was asked about it earlier, wherever at Memorial or somewhere, Jay Monahan said that Rob Manfred of Major League Baseball and Adam Silver, the NBA, had called and they had talked about things that sort of specific to their sport that they could apply that golf had learned. And I think that was a huge compliment. Now, Jay Monahan's not going to get up and blow his own horn, but he's very proud of the program they put together and the people behind it and how they came to sort of the realization of what they were dealing with. Because, go back to 6 months ago when everything screeched to a halt. Nobody knew where it was going. Nobody knew what it was going to be like. I mean, I was listening to a recent interview with the county manager in Charlotte, who was the last person in Mike Collins' studio on his talk show the day before everything stopped, and they were talking about the 11 cases of COVID in Mecklenburg County. And, that seems like a long time ago, doesn't it?
Yeah, Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking dead aim. This is, I was trying, and I'm probably wrong on this, but to the best of my knowledge, this is the first, if not one of the first, tour championships that's ever been contested, and there's been no Tiger and no Phil, and really not a whole lot of talk either way about them. Have we finally, or I don't know if finally is a good word, but have we truly started to see a real changing of the guard in the sport?
I think so. I mean, I think we've already seen Phil go win a Champions Tour event. So I think, the storyline is just going a different direction. I mean, with what DJ and John Rahm, the show they gave last week up there, and then, you know, Justin Thomas here, you had number one, number two, number three lined up in the world and in FedEx Cup points, and the way this thing goes, I think that's the story. Obviously, if Tiger were here, I mean, it's been 2 years since he won here and sort of capped that comeback in a lot of ways, and now you just sort of you miss him, and it's strange without him here. I think Phil has missed this a few times now, but I do think, as I've said many times, once the tournament starts, it's about who's there. It's not about who's not there. And, you know, you have this sort of weighted system here with certain guys, you know, Johnson, DJ starting in front and other guys having to chase him, but that can change quickly over 4 days. I mean, two shots can be gone in one hole when they get it going. I think it's a pretty intriguing setup. I think it's a golf course where, you know, you obviously have to hit it straight. As we know, in the Charlotte area, Bermuda rough has done very well this time of year. If you don't walk up on top of your golf ball there, you may not find it. And it's the same way down here. And I think whoever can drive it the best down here among those guys has the best chance.
That really was an impressive show we got last week. And, you know, I thought the tour maybe took too much on the chin after the first week in Boston, with the course being soft and rain contributing to it being soft. And, you know, outside of a couple of the TPC courses, those courses are really pretty easy for those guys, if we're honest about things. Memphis is tough. Sawgrass is tough. You know, but Hartford's easy. Scottsdale is easy. Obviously, Boston's easy. But, you know, if you're doing a three-week playoff, kind of like the Three Little Bears, we had one that was too soft. We had one that was too hard, and this one may be somewhere in the middle just right. And so if you have three different tournaments that have three different, you know, winning scores, then they got it right, didn't they?
Well, it certainly got some variety. And I think if you take one particular 30-under par person out at Boston, suddenly 19-under doesn't look that outrageous. I mean, we see that a lot of times. I mean, that's still low scoring. And I think, what Dustin Johnson did was just, I mean, it was sort of hard to get your head around that. I mean, that golf course is not that easy. But you give them perfect conditions, you get a guy on a roll, soft greens, and you want to know what can happen? Well, that happens. But you can also go back and look at history, how many times that happened, and what one score ever better under par than that. So that was, you know, sort of the outlier. But, you know, then they came back at Olympia Fields. I mean, that was just, you know, a punch in the face there. And it's just like, you can just wonder if guys just like, please let me be done with this. And so I think we're somewhere in between here. And so, yeah, you get some variety. You get a different feel each week. And, you know, as they sort of whittle it down from whatever it was, 125 to 70, now we're down to these 30 guys here. And I just think it's been good. I like having only three events. And at least last year the scoring format worked out so that there were no real questions. Now, of course, we could have something funky happen here this week. But I think the tour really likes where it is with this.
Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking Dead Aim. Thank you for bringing up Olympia Fields in more detail. I think that course kind of got a bad rap. The last time, I know they've held a USAM since then, but the U.S. Open was held there in 2003, and, you know, Furyk and several others had their way with the course. I believe the winning score was double digits under par, but it was soft conditions. They had rain. They didn't get the wind that you normally get in Chicago, and that's a venerable golf course and a great golf course that not only showed its teeth last week, but, Ron, how many times have you seen a course kick those guys in the mouth? And to a one, there was no griping. In fact, there was nothing but praise about a golf course like that.
Yeah, I think as long as they consider it fair, they're not going to complain. I mean, they might get frustrated with a shot here, a shot there. But, you know, I mean, it's a tough layout. Obviously, I was at that Open all those years ago with Furyk. I don't have much recollection of that U.S. Open. I mean, nothing against Jim Furyk, but that was among the more unmemorable U.S. Opens in the last 20 or 30 years. And, you know, the golf course, in a sense, didn't get another chance partly because of that. Obviously, there were some Chicago political issues that factored into that down the road, too. But, I think it stood up to them. And, I mean, you know, the wind blew, I mean, significant wind, and we all know what that does in terms of even the best players. And then you get, you know, if you hit it in the wrong spot, I mean, that was just, you know, looked like cornfields off the side of fairways in some spots. And, you know, you got the trees there. I mean, suddenly that was a very hard golf course. And I think Dustin Johnson, John Rahm, with that finish, that was the star parts of it. But Olympia Fields came away as with an enhanced reputation and sort of an unexpected star out of that whole thing.
I realize they're not big fans of heat, but is there any other reason why the USGA appears to be so I-95 and or West Coast centric? They almost, it just seems they ignore an entire middle section of the country where there are some tremendous golf courses.
I don't know if they feel like they've got something they could play there. I think obviously Olympia Fields, you know, made a case for getting back in the rotation. I think they, you know, Medina has hosted U.S. Opens, but it's signed on now with the sort of the PGA of America. There's a Ryder Cup, I guess. You know, they had a Ryder Cup. They've got PGA championships coming there. So I think you sort of fall on one side or the other. I don't really think they have someplace they really, really want to go. I think they love the every other year or so playing that West Coast primetime golf. And then they want to keep it in, you know, the Northeast Corridor. They love Wingfoot. You know, they love Shinnecock. They love Oakmont. And boy, do they love Pinehurst. And I'll leave it at that.
Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking Dead Aim. These guys are playing for a preposterous sum of money, $15 million. Last place this week is walking off with $400,000. The money's so great. Do any of the players gripe about giving DJ 10 shots off the bat?
Well, I think given there's $15 million at stake for the winner, they'd like not to have to give him 10 shots. But, you know, think about that. As long as you can just get here, it's $400,000. That's pretty good. I mean, I'll be honest. I would take that right now. And, you know, that's pretty good for last place. You know, I think they all know before they ever start what they're up against and how the system works. And you know, I think so many of them, guys like Mackenzie Hughes and others, I mean, just getting here. I mean, it gets you in all four majors next year. It gets you, you know, four of the six, since there are actually six majors next year. It gets you in. You know, the World Golf Championships. It gets you in the Tournament of Champions because they're sort of changing the qualifications for that next year. But, I mean, there's so much more beyond just the $400,000, and that's just for finishing last. So, you know, I think the money is so big that it's like, okay, you know, I mean, if you know, if they had to wear tiger striped clothing out there, they'd probably do it for this.
This is a rare thing that I can remember where numbers 1, 2, and 3 heading in to the Tour Championship were actually the number 1, 2, and 3 ranked golfers in the world. It doesn't get much better than that, than Thomas and Rahm and DJ, you know, what, three shots separating them heading into this weekend. It's the best of the best, and they've got four rounds to prove it.
Yeah, I mean, I think in many ways that's what you want. And you've got a chance, like if, you know, Rory McIlroy goes out and shoots 64 to start out and riding a high for being a daddy and going to try to go in for Poppy Kennedy McIlroy, his new daughter, you know, suddenly it changes all of that. I think, you know, I mean, a guy like Daniel Berger, was he starting six back? I mean, he's played so well since his restart, you know, given, you know, some, you know, you go 68-71, him and DJ suddenly has three shots with three rounds to go and you don't think anything of it. So, but I think from a starting point, this is all you could want.
I want to separate these last two questions into different things. To you, what is the best story since the restart in golf, the one that interests you most as a writer and covering the sport there at East Lake?
Well, I think we already talked about one thing, the fact that they got it done, that they've gotten through this point with no interruptions, with pretty minimal impact. You know, I mean, I remember what we all sort of felt when Nick Watney was the first guy to test positive, like, what does this mean? And then suddenly a couple others, you're like, oh no, how many is it going to take to stop it, slow the tour down or make them pause? And it never came, or it hasn't come, and hopefully it won't. And so I think that continues to be a part of it. I think, you know, other than that, I think just, you know, I think Dustin Johnson, these 2 weeks, I mean, going, yeah, you know, winning, and as I would call it, T1 and T1, has sort of changed the whole player of the year concept or voting or award winning. I think this week, because the players vote will come after the end of the Tour Championship, that's sort of the end of their season. I think there will be others like our Golf Writers Association, our vote will be based on the full year. We've obviously got a U.S. Open coming up in 2 weeks. We've got, you know, a Masters and all that. That'll change a lot of things. I just think the way guys have played in the restart, I think it's been really, really good.
Well, you teed me up for the final question. Who's your player of the year, or are you waiting until the end of this week or this weekend to sort of make up your mind?
I think it's still open. I think, obviously, you could make a case for Dustin Johnson. If John Rahm wins, you certainly probably say that. I mean, Justin Thomas is another guy, obviously, got a very strong case. Colin Morikawa could come right in there and do it. So, yeah, I think it's close. I think it's a lot of years we get to this point, you already know. It's pretty clear-cut, but given you know the big hole that was cut in this season and sort of the you know first act and second act of it, it feels you know it feels strange to think you know I mean Tiger won this season you know I mean Rory won back where it was in China or whatever so and those are all part of this year but I'm holding out right now and as a GWA member I get to hold out till probably the end of November.
From the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, that's Ron Green Jr. And up next, University of North Carolina head men's golf coach Andrew DiBattista takes dead aim at what continues to be an historic time in college golf. Presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. We are taking dead aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Andrew DiBattista is the head men's golf coach at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And much is made of the impact of COVID-19 on college football and basketball. But trust me, college golf has been devastated as well. So, Coach, the last time we talked, which admittedly feels like 3 or 4 decades ago, the NCAA had just announced that all the spring participants that had their season wiped clean were going to get an extra year. That's the last time we talked. I feel like 89 different things have happened, been modified, or completely changed since then. So before we get into the nuts and bolts, how are you doing? How are your guys?
I think 89,000 things have changed since then, and I think everything has changed. That specific thing has also changed 2, 3, 4 times. Everybody's hanging in there. Everybody's healthy, safe, most importantly. Other than that, I mean, I think we all have days. Like, days are just different, right? You have some days where everything feels great. And you wake up and you're positive and you're energetic. And then you have days you don't really know why you wake up and you're pretty pissed off. And there's frustration in there. You know, and that's happened certainly for me. It's happened with our guys. And honestly, we just kind of rally around each other and try to help each other out, try to support each other. And just, you know, we're all athletes. And especially in our sport, you always hear the cliche of control what you can control. We can control our minds. We can control our attitude. And that's what we've been focusing on, just trying to stay positive and trying to get better every single day. We have a little saying right now within our program, it's just simple. It doesn't matter, get better. So it doesn't matter what's happening. It doesn't matter the decisions that are being made. You know, the things that are happening that are out of our control, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, get better.
You know, that's so easy to say, but we're still talking about 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old kids, 22-year-old kids. And the psychology has to be so difficult, and you playing amateur psychologist has to be so difficult in that, okay, we realize what happened this spring, and it sucked, and it was a bummer. But this summer, because golf was so COVID-friendly, there was a lot of normalcy in the kids' lives. You had kids winning Carolina amateurs. You had kids winning Ohio amateurs. They were competing. They were playing. And in the back of their mind, they had this little oasis off in the distance of, we're doing this now, and this is preparing us for this fall when we're gonna get things back to normal. This is what we're going to do. And then they get hit with the sledgehammer again of not being able to play. I don't know how you deal with that.
Yeah, well, I promise you, everything you just described is true and it's happened. You know, we've had guys call us, Zoom with us. We've had, you know, in-person meetings outside, social distance, all that, where guys, they need to vent. They need to express their frustrations. And at the end of the day, we all understand the bigger picture here, right? We're talking about golf. We're talking about student-athletes. We're talking about hopefully a short period of time. There is a bigger picture out there, but it still impacts everybody. It impacts our guys. And as you said, 18 to 22 years old, sometimes it's really hard to understand what's going on. So we let them vent. We let them get their frustrations out, and then we just talk to them. And like I said, we're there for each other. We try to help each other, support each other. And the good news is we're back now, and it's not normal, but it's somewhat normal. We're back in the weight room this week as a team. We're back on the golf course. We had a nine-hole deal, fun, competitive match for practice yesterday. And really what's going on is golf isn't stopping. Golf has never stopped. It's the safest sport out there. The medical people have told us that, right?
Right.
So what has happened in the last 6 weeks or so, we've compiled a list. We sent it to our guys earlier this week, but I think we're now up to, there's 43 brand new tournaments that have been created around the country for college golfers, amateur golfers, whatever the case is. So our guys have opportunities to play. Unfortunately, it's not, with our team right now. But basically, we are all preparing and getting ready for tournaments and for competition. And it just so happens that, we prepare as a team and then they go off as individuals. You know, we got one guy up in Illinois right now. And then next week, we have a couple guys that are actually going down to the tournament in Myrtle Beach. And then we have guys that go to Virginia. And we'll have guys that are going to Pinehurst. So they will still get in their reps. They will still get in their tournaments and competition. We will still prepare as a team. It's just unfortunate that when they go off to compete, we won't be there together.
Head coach Andrew DiBattista is the head man at the University of North Carolina men's golf. He's our guest taking Dead Aim. Yeah, I got to tell you this story real quick before we get back to your kids. I, for one, was resentful on a personal level of what happened to college golf this spring, and I'll tell you why. Normally, the North Carolina four ball is held in late April, early May, and the college kids are in school, meaning they can't compete with the old geezers like me. Well, that tournament got postponed until August, and all you dang college golfers were able to enter it. And normally, you're able to make match play if your team's best ball over a couple of days is 4 or 5 under par. There were kids playing in the North Carolina four ball. I'm not making this up. Kid from UNCG shot a 59 on his own ball on day two with two bogeys, and his partner had to cut him four holes.
Yeah.
That's not right. Get these kids back in school playing tournaments so I don't have to deal with them.
we'll do the best we can to help you out.
That way, yes. It's, and again, it's about me.
I totally understand. we will tell our guys, because I'm sure you know about the North Carolina four ball that's coming up. I think it's like the second week of October. And there were so many teams that signed up. I think it was supposed to be, gosh, I want to say the Farms, the Cardinal Course in Greensboro. Well, they had to go out and get a second golf course to accommodate all of the teams. And I was on the website, this was probably 2 or 3 years ago, and it is a full field, basically double full field, and there is a massive wait list.
Oh, yeah. So it's crazy.
The only thing I can tell you is I'm not sure if you're in that field, but if you are, you might want to bring your A game that weekend.
I might want to bring somebody else's A game. So you mentioned all the individual tournaments, and I guess it's become almost a cottage industry, people smelling, okay, these kids need a place to play, so they're inventing tournaments or organizing tournaments on an individual level. That does not surprise me. Has anyone found a way? I know you can't do it officially, probably, or maybe you can, but is there some way to organize some team events for college golf sort of off the books this fall? Could that be happening?
Well, so in the ACC, and I guess that's all I can speak to, in the ACC, we as ACC golf coaches, we're not allowed to do any of that, but there's nothing that would stop our guys from essentially going to play pickup basketball. Right, so
right.
We'll use our example because it's easy and obvious. If the North Carolina basketball players wanted to go find a court or a gym and they wanted to play 3-on-3 or 5-on-5 against some of the Duke basketball players or NC State, like that's just normal. Like nobody can stop that. And you know this. I mean, golf, but college golf, they run in small circles.
They all know each other since they were 10.
Yeah, their guys, they've been playing in the same tournaments with the Duke guys and the NC State guys and the Wake guys and the Greensboro guys and the ECU guys. They all know each other. So if there's an off weekend, which there's going to be a lot of them because we're only allowed to be with our guys for 8 hours a week right now per NCAA rules, if they could go set up you know, rounds of golf, just like they do in the summer. Like, nobody can, there's nothing wrong with that. That's just literally them playing their sport in a fun environment. So we can't control it, but in theory, can it happen as long as it's coming from the young men and the young women? Then yes.
Andrew DiBattista is the head men's golf coach at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, our guest taking dead aim. This number intrigues me that you just threw out there, that you're allowed 8 hours with them a week. So that is where you can be in their presence. Does that include phone calls? How does that work? Because to me, that's two rounds of golf.
Well, it's even less than that, because those 8 hours, four can be strength and conditioning, and only four can be related to your sport. So unfortunately, that's one round to go unless you play really, really, really fast. But what I mean by that is everybody's different. So this is like never talked about, right? All you hear is in season, out of season. And for us, it's usually a natural progression. Guys show up in August. You go in season because you have tournaments. Tournaments end in October. Then you go into your off season. And in the off season, sure, you practice a little bit, but you mostly work out. You know, and then you have Thanksgiving and the final exams, and then Christmas, you come back and you're back in season. Well, what they're really talking about is it's called your championship segment. For men's golf, we get 144 days to be, quote-unquote, in season. So as coaches, this is your choice. And I know there's some coaches that they came in and they said, you know what, we still have the right, we still have the choice to be with our guys 20 hours a week. So there are coaches and teams that are practicing 20 hours a week. They're playing tons of golf. For us, we just went with the mentality of our guys are so competitive that they are still going to come out and practice every single day. We're not worried about that. They can voluntarily ask us for help, so we're not worried about that. But if we truly do get started in January, what we can do now is we can work backwards from the last day of the ACC Championship and count 144 all the way back. And that gets us basically to, like, the first week of November. So now what we can do is we can slide into our 20-hour segment in November and December, in theory right now, if things don't change. Right? So now all of a sudden, in our normal, quote-unquote, off-season, now we can be with our guys preparing, qualifying, having practices, more hours, et cetera, in preparation for tournaments that are coming in January.
Gotcha. See, it's course management just on a time level with the coaches. That's UNC head men's golf coach Andrew DiBattista, and when we return, he takes dead aim at his team, their amazing individual performances over the summer, and where we are now with the future of college golf, the immediate future, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. We're taking dead aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors, and continuing now with the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill head men's golf coach Andrew DiBattista. All right, so let's flash forward a little bit. Best case scenario, and that's all I want to talk about. Best case scenario, we come back in the spring in January after Christmas break. What kind of season could you be looking at?
If you're asking for best case scenario, we're talking about a normal season. And I know ACC coaches, we're working together, just trying to create opportunities for our guys, right? Because right now it sounds like the SEC is going to play golf. It sounds like the Big 12 is going to play golf. So you're already a little bit behind. So what can you do to you're not going to make it all up, but can you add in a tournament? Can you add in two tournaments? And can you still do it responsibly, meaning you're not going to stress your guys out, you know, from a well-being standpoint, from an academic standpoint, all of those things. So if you're asking me for best case scenario, the spring would look very normal. It would be 5-6 tournaments leading up to ACCs, and then it would be the ACC Championship, and then NCAA Regionals, and then the National Championship.
All right. Well, let's go with that. Andrew DiBattista is the head men's golf coach at University of North Carolina. Let's talk about your team a little bit. In terms of, for people that don't realize, North Carolina tried to bring everybody back on campus. It went horribly wrong. Students that were doing on-campus living dorms were basically sent home. How many freshmen do you have on your roster that were impacted by that, and how are you handling that?
We'll see. Now you gotta make everything even more complicated than it is. We have two freshmen. They were supposed to be in the dorm, and Now, oddly enough, and thankfully, fortunately, the dorm that they were supposed to be in was under construction throughout the summer. These guys literally got an email about a week, maybe 2 weeks before classes started, saying there's been delays in construction. You can't move in yet. So literally, Ryan Smith was at the USAM during the first week of class. So he elected, with classes being mostly online, he stayed in California. Peter Fountain went into a hotel because that's where the dorm put him. And then, you know, everything kind of happened. And now, essentially, what they're going to do is they're going to stay in that hotel, which I'm not going to give the name of the hotel, but let's just say it's a lovely situation for these two young men. Like a lovely situation. So they're going to be in a hotel side by side. They will each have their own room, but they have a little connecting door, and that's where they'll be all semester. And Ryan Smith, our guy from California, he's actually on his way right now. So he'll arrive for the first time later today.
So his lovely situation at home didn't compare to the lovely situation in Chapel Hill. That lets you know how lovely the situation is.
Yeah, exactly. It's tough, too. Like, kind of going back, we've talked about this. These are 18 to 22-year-olds, and Peter Fallon, the other freshman, he's been verbally committed forever, and Ryan Smith has been verbally committed forever, right? There's been this buildup, this excitement, this anticipation to get here and get going. And then, you know, there's speed bump, big bump. You know, but we can still be together. And that's what we want. That's what these guys want. Everybody was able to make their own decision, right? So if you're not comfortable coming back, that's perfectly fine. There's no pressure to do so. But all I know is the guys that are here, and it's most of them, we're very excited to be together and to get rolling again.
Well, you brought up Fountain's name. Pete is second generation with you. Pryor played with you for 4 years in college. What's it like? Is it easier when you have that situation, a guy who already sort of knows the ropes coming in or can expect how it's going to be or has been prepared by his brothers to how it's going to be as opposed to a normal college freshman?
Yeah, honestly, I think it's a huge advantage. I think it's a big-time advantage. I think the thing that catches people off guard is the time demands of a student athlete, especially a golfer. You know, let's be honest, golf, probably not the most physically demanding sport, but I'll argue with a lot of people that when it comes to the time commitment, I mean, that's big time. You know, 20 hours a week, this and that, absolutely. But, I mean, you know this. If you want to be great at our sport, it takes a lot. It takes a lot of discipline, a lot of time. And the biggest challenge that freshmen have is when they get to campus in a normal environment in August, all of a sudden everything in their life hits them at the same time and most things in their life are new, right? So you're on a new college campus. You're trying to figure out where your classes are. Is it in that building? Is it in this building? Where's the sports med building? Where is tutoring? Where's the fueling station? You know, and then you got to play new golf courses. And oh, by the way, it's practice and it's qualifying and you're competing. You're trying to get in the lineup. You're trying to get to the grocery store. You're trying to figure out how to do laundry by yourself. There's just a lot of new things. So I think anything you can do to pull out or reduce or remove some of those stressors, it helps. And that's one of the reasons why Peter Fountain has kind of a couple of advantages. One, because his brother was already here. Two, Peter's been so close to our program for a long time that he knows standards and expectations and how we do things. But also, Peter came in January, right?
Right.
I don't know how many people actually knew that.
I don't think I knew that, no.
Right, so he wasn't playing. That was on purpose, just to get him in, truly get his feet underneath him, especially academically, and kind of get him into a routine and not have him compete. So he's actually been here since January. I think it's all very helpful.
Well, and he had a great summer. It was great at the Carolina AM, was the medalist at the North and South. And then, you know, Ryan Greaser, shoot, he won the Ohio Amateur. Talk a little bit about your guys in this summer, some other things that went down, because I know they weren't the only two that had big summers on the course.
Yeah, no, our guys played great. You know, I'm kind of chuckling because I guess that's my way of dealing with the pain of not knowing that we can't compete as a team right now because we were so excited. You know, but I guess we'll start at the top, right? You got COVID fifth-year senior Austin Hitt, who's supposed to be returning, right? He was an All-American 2 years ago. He's one of the better players in the country. He made it all the way to the quarterfinals at the Western just a few weeks ago. right? So you got him, and then you come down, and you got Ryan Gerard and Nathan Elmore. Ryan Gerard continues to develop as a human being and develop big time as a golfer. He had a really nice summer. He was an All-American last year. And then you drop down, and you got Ryan Burnett, Dougie Urgut, Luis Castro. Ryan Burnett literally was one of the best players in the country last year, was a second-team All-American. And then you drop down, and you got Greaser, Austin Greaser, who you mentioned, Jordan McNealy and Keenan Cole. Greaser had an exceptional summer. Not only was he winning, but he was winning big. He taught himself how to win and how to hit the gas pedal, right? How to not look backwards, how to not look at leaderboards. Just keep doing what you're doing and drive on. Keep making birdies. Accelerate. Right, I think that's a critical thing for all young golfers.
I think that's the hardest thing in golf to do, and I know that, look, I'm around scratch, and I had a situation 2 weeks ago where I made four birdies in a row, and then all of a sudden, I got tight playing not to screw up, and it wasn't something that I consciously said, okay, I'm going to quit doing it, but it's a mindset of trying to stay in that mode of just doing what you were doing, you know, hitting the middle of the fairway, putting it 10 feet to the hole and making the putt. You know, all of a sudden it hits you what you're doing, and you can either continue to do it or tighten up, and I tightened up, and I'm sure that's what 90% of the golf world does.
Yes. Yeah, there's a reason why I don't think this is a secret, but I mean, we do it every so often. Other college programs do it, but you move your guys up every once in a while and you play from forward tees, and you try to have them get to 3 under early and then get to 4 under, and then once you're at 4 under, get to 6 under, and once you're 6 under, get to 8 under. And sometimes it is uncomfortable. Sometimes you're 4 under through 14, and then you're trying not to think about it, but all of a sudden you're like, oh, where's the clubhouse? How quickly can I get there? Right, I mean, you see the scores that they shoot on tour. I mean, look at what DJ did the other – that was 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, it's insane.
I mean, there's so many good players out there that it's not just the physical tools, but it's also the mental tools. Great stuff like Greaser this summer, and then the two young guys that we talked about. Peter Fountain was exceptional, and I give that kid so much credit because – with him coming to school early in January and when his junior golf career, ended, he hadn't played in a competitive tournament since October. And then he went out in early June at the North Carolina Open, and he finished second right behind Kelly Mitchum. And then it was just, he went on a roll. I mean, he won the North Carolina Am. He, like you said, he was medalist at the North South. He finished second at the Carolinas Am and just had a very productive summer, not just the scores that he was shooting, but now the confidence that he has. And then you got Ryan Smith, mentioned him, coming in from California, extremely talented, has played in 3 consecutive U.S. amateurs, and it's just a group that we're really excited about. And, we got to wait a little longer until we can go peg it against other people, but our time will come and we'll be ready.
From the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, that's head men's golf coach Andrew DiBattista. I'd also like to thank Ron Green Jr. of the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer for his time and insight this week. Want to remind you, keep up with us on Facebook. Just search Taking Dead Aim. Give us a like. Featured there now are links to articles on the latest goings-on in and around the game. Weather-wise here in the QC, hey, Labor Day weekend, and unseasonably comfortable. So a great place to be to get out with all safe practices, of course, and teeing it up and letting this game continue to haunt your soul and break your heart. And if you do put a peg in the ground, remember to exhale, swing, pose, and keep it in the short grass. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, @CLT_golfguy, and I'll see you right here next week, Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors.